Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to look at the history of Fox News and take a deep dive into that. The country is very divided, in part because of misinformation spread on Fox News at an almost hourly basis. So we're going to do that and then later on open up the phone lines. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we were getting people's reaction to the inauguration of Joe Biden to be the new president. Here's what two listeners had to say.
On today's show about the inauguration, I was totally thrilled with the inauguration. After 4 years of you-know-who, it was so inspiring. I think Jill Biden is going to be an awesome first lady. Kamala will be super as the new VP. And Amanda Gorman, her performance and her poem, I saw her on PBS on Tuesday evening and told folks to look for her. She was so great. All the entertainment was great. I loved the virtual parade. And just a quick note to the caller who left the message at the beginning of the show about someone that she seemed to care about and seemed to be on the other side and believing the big lie. Let her know she has lots of support. Change is good. I have turned many people on to 88.5. Thank you for being there, and thank you for being in Tampa Bay.
On your show, there is a persistent number of callers that use the false equivalency. And in the case of the armed attempted coup undertaken at the direction of the President of the United States and his allies, and nearly successful with violent threat to people, including the Vice President or former Vice President, and that is one kind of street violence. There was a small fraction of Black Lives Matter, anti-war, women's rights, and environmental protesters who have engaged in violence. But the false equivalency is that never has the left wing in our lifetimes ever had organized violent street mobs with racism and an attempt to overthrow democracy as their core policy, led by a cult leader. Violence is not always the same, and what Trump and his armed rebellious people tried to do to our government has never been done by anyone, whether it's a Biden Democrat or a Bernie leftist. It's all on the right wing and the Confederacy.
Well, there you have a couple of listener comments about yesterday's Radioactivity program. Thanks for tuning in. This is WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori, and in a few minutes, we'll open up the phone lines. But I want to introduce a couple of topics before we start. First of all, as you heard on the NPR News just a moment ago, in Washington, the House will transmit its article of impeachment charging former President Donald Trump with incitement of insurrection to the U.S. Senate this coming Monday, triggering the start of a trial unlike any in American history. This is according to Senator Chuck Schumer. Schumer, the majority leader, said that the decision had been relayed by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, but Schumer declined to elaborate further on how the trial would run. Once the article arrives in the U.S. Senate, Senate rules say that chamber must almost immediately be transformed into a court of impeachment and sit in judgment until a verdict is reached. Schumer and Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, his Republican counterpart, have been negotiating for days over further parameters for the trial in hopes of settling on bipartisan rules. Democrats are intent on trying to set up a dual track whereby the Senate could still confirm President Biden's cabinet nominees before the trial starts each day to try to minimize the impact of the proceedings on Biden's first days in office. So we're going to hear more about this at the top of the hour on the NPR News. I was reading that from the New York Times. And so it looks like the impeachment trial could start next week. We'll find out more as the hours go by. And please stay tuned to 88.5 FM because we'll have good, solid information for you to rely on. Well, there is an ongoing discussion about that assault on the U.S. Capitol. And it's taking place in print and on radio and on television. And on television, lots of discussion on the news networks, on Fox and MSNBC and CNN. And we're going to listen to a segment from last night on Sean Hannity's show, where he was interviewing House Speaker, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who's a frequent contributor to the Fox News channel. And he was discussing what he thinks Democrats want to do to Republicans. And I want you to listen closely to this and tell me what you think. You can email us here in the studio, the address dj@wmnf.org. Cindy Philpott is our phone producer, by the way, part of the team. So let's listen to a little bit of Fox News from last night and listen to what former House Speaker Newt Gingrich said about the Democrats. And I want you to kind of dissect this with me.
Joining us now, Fox News contributor, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Mr. Speaker, well, let's first get your reaction to, well, Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is a patriot. Ted Cruz dared to ask for a 10-day audit. Now, they weren't going to win that battle, but he explained why he thought it was important for the 83% Gallup-polled Republicans that think that the integrity of the election was in question. That's not my poll. That's the poll of the Gallup. And or you're an enemy or, of course, seditious caucus. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I think you're seeing the hysteria of the Biden system, because it's not really about Biden himself. It's this entire team around him who are radicals, who believe if they could exterminate the Republicans, that would be one way to get to unity. As a New York Times columnist wrote this morning, you know, if Biden really wanted unity, he could start by lynching Vice President Pence. It just gives you a sense of the ferocity and the anger and the hatred that underlies the modern left.
That was Newt Gingrich just last night on the Fox News channel, saying that the Biden team was filled with radicals, that they want to exterminate Republicans. And he alleged that a New York Times columnist said that Vice President Mike Pence should be lynched. Let's listen to that one more time.
Joining us now, Fox News contributor, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Mr. Speaker, well, let's first get your reaction to, well, Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is a patriot. Ted Cruz dared to ask for a 10-day audit. Now, they weren't going to win that battle, but he explained why he thought it was important for the 83% Gallup-polled Republicans that think that the integrity of the election was in question. That's not my poll. That's the poll of the Gallup. And or you're an enemy or, of course, seditious caucus. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I think you're seeing the hysteria of the Biden system, because it's not really about Biden himself. It's this entire team around him who are radicals, who believe if they could exterminate the Republicans, that would be one way to get to unity. As a New York Times columnist wrote this morning, you know, if Biden really wanted unity, he could start by lynching Vice President Pence. It just gives you a sense of the ferocity and the anger and the hatred that underlies the modern left.
All right, so that's Newt Gingrich speaking on a primetime program on the Fox News Channel, that Ted Cruz simply asked for an audit of the voting results. 83% of Republicans think it's a good idea, that the Biden team is filled with radicals. They want to exterminate Republicans. And he said that a New York Times columnist suggested that Biden could lynch Vice President Pence to create unity. Well, that's pretty typical of what you can hear on Fox News, unfortunately. Just a few side notes. In every election, in every county supervisor's office, there are audits done of election results, and that takes place pro forma. It's just something, a way that every election supervisor around the country double checks to make sure that their voting systems work. So those audits have really taken place. Now, a national audit has not taken place. That's true. But election supervisors who are sometimes Republicans, sometimes Democrats, sometimes nonpartisan, always check the election results in their county. Gingrich called Biden teams the Biden team radicals. We could talk about that if you want, that they want to exterminate Republicans. He offered no proof of that, and it seems, well, I'll let you tell me what you think that remark amounts to. And he also made a misstatement. He said that a New York Times columnist wrote that if Biden wanted to create unity, he should lynch Vice President Pence. Well, actually, it was not in the New York Times, as Gingrich was suggesting there. It was a contributor to the New York Times, not an actual staff writer for the New York Times, who tweeted out a message suggesting that pretty outrageously on January 20th, just a few days ago. But then, just a few hours later, apologized and said, no, I shouldn't have said that. Now, Gingrich didn't tell you that in that interview last night on Hannity, and didn't really put the ideas that he put forward in context, which happens pretty frequently on Fox News. So I figure that what we do right now is listen back to a documentary that came out in 2015. And we'll listen to this for a while. This is a documentary before President Trump came into office, but it was done by a filmmaker who was very concerned about the impact that Fox News had on her dad. And we're going to listen to this documentary. It's called The Brainwashing of My Dad, and we'll hear it, and then we're going to open up the phone lines in a few minutes. So this is the documentary film, The Brainwashing of My Dad.
Once upon a time, there was an average American family living in an average American town. After the family moved, the father left his familiar carpool and began a long solo commute to work. And gradually, he began to change. He looked the same. He dressed the same. But something was very different. But this isn't a story about just one man. It's a story about a media phenomenon that changed a father and divided a nation.
My dad with me when I was a baby. He really loved me. This was in Arizona where I was born. He was goofy, like a lot of other dads, I guess. My dad was a really fun dad. All the kids in the neighborhood really liked him because he was funny and told jokes and would play with us. He was a really good dad. He loved animals. He could always be counted on to help persuade my mom if we wanted another pet. For vacations, my dad took us on camping trips. It was a lot of fun. My mom didn't like it so much. She didn't really like roughing it. But we all still had a really great time. He came from humble roots. He never had any bad words about any race, people, or person. I remember this one time when we all went to New York. We got outside Port Authority, and there was an African-American homeless man. And he asked my dad for some money. My father gave him what was at that time a decent amount of money and called him sir. That made such an impression on me and taught me you treat everybody with respect. We weren't really a political family. My dad was a non-political Kennedy Democrat. But then when he started listening to talk radio, I saw him change a lot.
You used to consider yourself a Democrat, right?
Yeah, before I knew anything, I had any shit. But until then, I was fat, dumb, and happy.
I think I first noticed something different about him when I came down to visit. I was working in New York at the time. He picked me up at the bus station and was driving me back to the house. On the ride home, we passed the Hooters. He mentioned that he was really pissed off that some feminazis did not want women with their breasts hanging out to be working at Hooters. I said something like, well, maybe the feminists have a point. He was so mad, he threatened to pull the car over and let me hitchhike home.
Hey,
I was very surprised because I was thinking, I bet he never even walked into a Hooters before. He became really angry about stuff. Stuff that I didn't know he ever even gave a thought to. Like, you know, Hooters.
They're in jail or not, they are appropriating their own kind.
That's why we should go in there and stop them before they destroy our country.
When we moved and he had a very long commute by car, he would listen to the radio on the long drive. Then he started to change.
You know, the feminazis began their quest to make women more like men, dress like us, acquire power like us, have careers like us, all that.
Rush Limbaugh is one of my heroes. I agree with him in politics.
And then his Rush Limbaugh loving buddy told him he could listen to more talk radio at night with a tiny portable radio and earbuds. But it would still disturb my mother, so he decided to move into the other bedroom. And then it got worse after he discovered Fox News. His new beliefs came first. It was almost like he joined a cult or had a new religion.
Frank is the family pest. He has to force his political views on all of us.
I did it Frank's way. It was his way or the highway when it came to politics.
I was not aware that Frank had strong political leanings one way or another. It was just pretty much food and family what he was interested in.
After emailing came in, yeah, then you get all kinds. I would get political emails too, but they were factual, bringing things up to date, where Dad's emails were hateful against Democrats, and he would forward them to me and the children and ask him, please, don't send these emails or I'll block you.
He started getting fanatical.
Oh, he would send some nasty email back like, F you, or you guys are full of S blank blank T.
I started getting his emails and I got 394 emails. I really thought there was somebody else other than Frank Senko sending these things. And in fact, he didn't author any of these. They were just, you know, recycled things that he received from his other cronies. I was, you know, wondering what happened to Frank since the time I saw him.
I'd always thought that he was capable of deeply thinking about issues, but it was apparent at that point that it's not that he wasn't capable of it, he wasn't interested in it. And that, to me, was a dangerous signal.
The brain has not only been washed, as they say, just been dry cleaned.
So what did happen to Dad? Was he brainwashed? I didn't know. This went on for years. So I finally decided to make a film to figure it out.
Jennifer, is this your book?
Yes.
He's my hero.
Why is he your hero?
Politically, I agree with him beautifully. I always agree with him.
We knew better than to discuss politics together because it would just end in arguments and bitterness.
I had a Kickstarter campaign to raise some money, and before I knew it, people were coming out of the woodwork, contacting me from all over the country, telling me similar stories. And I thought, wow, this is a real phenomenon.
They just drummed into her what they wanted her to hear. She's a completely different person.
My brother became very fact resistant.
My reaction was, who are you and what have you done with my stepfather?
Disjointed existence.
And he was completely changed. He was bitter and angry.
At one point, he threatened to get a bus because that was challenging.
Obsessed, and she had never been like that.
He was carrying a small pistol.
She was not hateful.
Shot twice.
It broke my heart to see my parents.
Very loving and caring.
I don't really know these people anymore.
I mean, just goes up his tirades.
I spoke with each one and found we all had one thing in common. Someone close to us became enraged and unreachable after excessively listening to or watching right-wing media. How did this happen?
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy.
Decades ago, I was a junior hippie. My big brother was the real thing with hair down to his waist. I witnessed and felt part of the social revolution happening at that time, and I believed our country was going in a more open direction. Years later, when Reagan came in, I could feel the country was shifting to a more hardened place. And that's around the time my dad started to change. Wouldn't have necessarily thought to go all the way back to the 60s, but author Claire Connor, who wrote Wrapped in the Flag, contacted me after she saw my trailer. Her personal experience with the John Birch Society helped put into place a major piece of the puzzle.
The John Birch Society came out of the McCarthy era and was built on this concept that the communist menace was right around the corner. Very quickly, the John Birch Society moved from those bad guys over in the Soviet Union, China, or in Cuba, to the idea that we had those bad guys right in our own government.
In 1964, Republican candidate Barry Goldwater had many Birch supporters. But this damaged him because, years earlier, word had leaked out that their founder, Robert Welch, had written a secret book branding sitting Republican president and World War II hero Dwight D. Eisenhower a communist. The Birches were labeled as nutty extremists. Goldwater and his platform were hammered by Lyndon Johnson. The right wing was declared dead. So they started to hit back. One of the most powerful ways was through creating their own media.
I first spotted David Brock in a documentary called The Hunting of the President. He had been a conservative operative involved in the organized effort of trying to take President Clinton down. But he came to regret it and wrote about what he learned from an insider's view. When I read his book, The Republican Noise Machine, I knew I had to talk to him. It took me a year and a half to get him, but I finally got to interview David Brock.
One of the very first things that the conservative movement did in trying to get control of the debate in the country was to do that through the media. And they established a couple of different organizations that market the notion of liberal media bias to the public. And so one of them is called Accuracy in Media by someone named Rita Irvine, who had worked in the Nixon administration. And basically the idea behind this group was to counter their feeling that the media was opposed to Nixon's policies in Vietnam.
More certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is to end in a stalemate.
You could see how the campaign to discredit the media would lay the groundwork for a vast alternative media that would come later.
One night I was watching Bill Moyers on Channel 13, and I learned about the role of Roger Ailes.
And I went back to the Nixon administration, and Roger Ailes was in the, who was the chairman of Fox News, was in the Nixon administration.
He was Nixon's television advisor.
Absolutely.
Then I found Gabriel Sherman. He was the guy to talk to about Roger Ailes, for sure.
Roger Ailes understood that TV is about one thing. It's about emotion. And you need to communicate to the audience and hook into them on an emotional level. And Richard Nixon, who by all accounts was a very smart, a brilliant man who had a command of the issues, he couldn't connect with the audience. You know, he came off as stiff, as shifty-eyed, as the famously in the 1960 presidential debate against John Kennedy, he was sweating. It was a terrible performance. Then he meets Roger Ailes in 1968. At the time, Roger Ailes was a young producer, the wunderkind of television at the age of 26. And so Roger Ailes coached Richard Nixon on how to communicate those ideas to the average American who was watching television every night at dinner table. Richard Nixon, whose political career almost blew up because of television, was able to win the presidency because he mastered it. At the time, in the late 1960s, TV had finally become a mass medium, and yet there really weren't people who had decoded the medium. Roger Ailes told Nixon that to appeal to the audience, he needed to use short, snappy one-liners that can stick in the audience's mind.
A great philosophy is never won without defeat. It is always won without fear.
And so really, Roger Ailes was a pioneer in the whole art of the soundbite. He told Nixon that America is dumb, so give them something simple, boil it down, and they'll get it.
Ailes was so involved with advising the administration, he even outlined Nixon's role in the lighting of the White House Christmas tree. But his designs for the GOP went much deeper. Ailes was outlining a way to avoid, quote, the censorship, the priorities, and the prejudices of network news selectors and disseminators. Written in 1970, this memo talks about how television had become the most powerful news source because people are lazy and want their thinking done for them. It became the blueprint for Fox News, and although its authorship is unclear, Roger Ailes' handwritten notes are seen throughout the document.
There are simple things that the American people believe in. It's the reason John Wayne is still the top one in the top five movie stars of all time. He's been dead for 40 years. But you always knew about him. Don't touch my woman, don't steal my horse, and don't ever draw a gun on me. Otherwise, we're gonna get along fine.
It offers you a little action.
Roger Ailes was fired from the White House for seeming like he could go too rogue. Basically, he was caught talking behind Richard Nixon's back to author Joe McGinnis. After that, Ailes started working for TVN, a television news network owned by the Coors family.
Their goal was to be like a tugboat to the Queen Mary. They were just going to be going along and pushing the boat a little further to the right and a little further to the right, and their goal is ultimately to put the great ship over as far right as they could. And Ailes was working for them at the time, and he didn't know much about news. I'm not even sure I know that he knows much about news now, but he sure does know television. He's as good as television as anyone in the country, and he's a great propagandist.
By the way, the motto they came up with was fair and balanced.
My father, my stepmother, used to be very loving and caring, patient, very kind-hearted, Christian-based individuals. And we noticed that they became more hostile towards people that were not believing the way that they did. Their conversation became very hateful.
The brilliance of Nixon was to bend a politics that was based on deference to money and plutocracy and frame it in terms of a kind of cultural populism. The idea that the real snobs are not the people who hire and fire, but the people who kind of decide cultural trends.
When Nixon was running for president, he had a problem. In 1964, Goldwater lost. Conservative was a dirty word. Everybody wanted to be a liberal. Nixon comes along in 67 and he says, we got to get working people to vote for Nixon. How do we do this?
Between 1964 and 67, the anti-war movement felt like a betrayal to many veterans who saw it as unpatriotic. Nixon seized on this and was openly hostile to the protesters. At the same time, women were pushing the boundaries of societal norms, which dictated they stay at home, raise children, and dress like ladies. Nixon came out for traditional family values, thus capturing the vote of the working men who felt threatened and didn't like what they saw as radical feminism.
All right, so that is the opening of the film The Brainwashing of My Dad by filmmaker Jan Senko. It's interesting that she did that film in 2015 before, while Barack Obama was in the White House and before President Trump became president. And I'm wondering if you have had a situation like that in your family where somebody who was maybe moderate or a mainstream Republican went far off
the deep end by listening to talk radio or watching Fox News. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. If you want to call in and make your comment, you can also email us here in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. I have a whole lot. That's just part of the film. I think the film is about 90 minutes long, maybe a little shorter. So we heard about 15 or 20 minutes of the film. Brainwashing My Dad, it's online. You can see it. Maybe I'll play it again next week. But let's take some phone calls from listeners. And I'm curious whether or not you've found that people become extreme by listening to talk radio, AM talk radio, or watching Fox News or One America Network, or maybe even subscribing to the QAnon theory. Let's go to Ted in Ellenton. Hi, Ted. You're on MNF. Thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Rob, 22 years ago, plus about a month, Newt Gingrich and his snakes impeached Bill Clinton on superfluous charges.
Yeah, well, he had sex with an intern in the White House, so I think people were pretty angry about that.
Rob.
So if you were to compare two things, if you were urging people to go protest at the U.S. Capitol, and those people heard you and said, "We're going to storm the Capitol, go inside because President Trump told us to go inside." And you've spent weeks leading up to this, and some of your staffers on your campaign worked on that protest. Is that impeachable?
Well, yes. But another matter, my father is 88 years old, a lifelong Republican. Over the last 4 years, he goes, "There's too many stupid Republicans." And I'll end it at that.
All right, Ted, thanks a lot. Say hi to your dad. Hope he has good health. 813-239-9663. Let's get Eileen in St. Petersburg. Hi, Eileen. Thank you for calling.
Hey,
what would you like
Rob,
to say?
How are you today?
I'm good.
I started listening to the first little bit of that documentary, and all I could see was my mother's face. My mother was a full-blooded Irish Catholic. Gave birth to 9 children. We were poor. We needed all the help we could get. And in her later years, and I think a lot of it comes with it, some of the more mature people who are alone, they don't know what else to do, and they wind up just listening to the boob tube all day long. But my mother turned into a rabid Republican, so polar opposite to the way that I was brought up.
Was she a Kennedy Democrat? Was she a Kennedy Democrat when you were younger?
Yes. I mean, I remember I was 8 years old when Bobby Kennedy died or was shot. And I remember my mother crying and going, "Oh, dear God, not Bobby, too." I can still see her standing in my living room sobbing. Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. But all she listened to was Fox TV.
And if you listen to those Bobby Kennedy speeches today, they're quite inspiring, and he was very progressive for his time.
Indeed. And it was just so heartbreaking. And to this day, you know, I mentioned we have a large family. To this day, our family is very divided, very divided. There are, I think, I'm probably one of, honestly, I think I'm the only one who is not a Trump supporter.
Do they all watch Fox News, or what do you think the method was for them?
Yeah, I think they all do watch Fox News. And my one brother listens to Rush Limbaugh all the time. So it's really with, I have one sibling, my oldest sister, will not speak to me right now. Mm. We got into a disagreement over Black Lives Matter and white privilege, and we don't speak anymore.
Oh no! What happens at Christmas or at weddings or at Thanksgiving?
Yeah, those don't happen anymore. I mean, you know, with the pandemic, that's kind of one of the good things is that we don't get together. You know, so the conversation just has to not be there. What bothers me the most about the situation and the family, and even with some of my other friends who are very staunch Republicans and Trump supporters, is not being able to have a dialogue. You know, that's the thing that bothers me. I enjoy listening to why they believe what they believe. It's interesting to me. And sometimes I'll say something and I want to check it out, you know, but I enjoy listening. But when I try to share my perspective, I get called names. I get called naive. How can you be so stupid? You know, and I don't see the benefit to that. So I have a new mantra now that we have President Biden. I am not engaging any bullies on anything. I'm just not. I'm going to let them say their piece and just go, oh, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing. And I'm not even going to bother because I'm hoping it's going to keep things a little bit nicer. If you don't engage with the bully, they tend to go away.
All right, Eileen. Thank you. Thank you for the call. I'm so sorry about your family. This sounds very sad. Thanks, Eileen. I'm asking people whether or not they've had a similar experience to what Jan Senko was talking about in her film, The Brainwashing of My Dad, where she says that her dad was a pretty moderate guy through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and then in the 80s began to turn far right because of the influence of talk radio. I'm sure there's people who are listening right now who are fans of commercial talk radio and are kind of cheering that on, saying, right on. So if you're one of those people, you're welcome to call too. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike in Brandon. Mike, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. As always, good speaking with you. I mentioned to you and Mark, I think last week or whatnot, that, you know, I lost a 40-year friendship, even though I knew my one of my best friends had certain, let's say, leanings, but I didn't think it would cost us the friendship, but it did. And, you know, I've always, I'll keep reaching out, and at some point, hopefully he'll reciprocate. But as I was listening to what you were playing, I think one of the most critical things that, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Reagan, during his administration, if not Bush's, was the overturning of the Fairness Doctrine. That was the catalyst that you could have, instead of having a conversation or the discussion of different viewpoints, now you could have, all right, I'm going to discuss what I want, and if you call my program, and if you go counter to what I'm thinking, I will immediately disconnect you, and then I can frame a conversation that never took place, but I can frame it. And because I have called into some of the national conservative shows, and I always know that they have the power. All they have to do is press the disconnect button. You know, it's not like what you and Mark and the other personalities on this station provide, a truly conversational medium and format, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Yeah, we could go on and on about the Fairness Doctrine. It wasn't Nirvana, and I think some people think it was a Nirvana. There were more liberals on commercial radio back then. Here in the Tampa Bay area during the Reagan era, there was a guy named Bob Lasseter who was a very strong liberal, and he was on one of the AM stations here. But still, at that time, the station was dominated mostly by conservatives, and people always speak of those days as the halcyon days. Having listened to a lot of radio since the early 1960s, I don't remember it that way, but maybe other people do. But I do think, at least on the books, there was a law that said that you had to provide some sort of equal time for controversial opinions and allow people to have access. I mean, here we allow people to have access. We have phone comments and email comments that we read on the air. And I know your frustration. I remember as a college student, I called into a talk radio station just outside of Dayton, and was talking to the guy there, and it was during the Vietnam War, and the guy just shut me down as I was trying to explain a few things to him that he didn't want to hear. But even back then, he shut me down. So,
well, I'll just leave this bit, and I think this is what a lot of people who, as the ladies' documentary talking about, they're listening to the conservatives. Because I'll be honest with you, in a given day, I'll flip through, just kind of get a sense of what they're talking about. But the thing is, what they lose sight of, they're entertainers, because as they do their 5 to 10 minute montage to whatever it is, you know, whatever their so-called issue for the day, and then they'll promptly go, oh, brought to you by such and such gold and tax evasion and whatever else. So they are, at the core, they're opinion people, but they are entertainers. They're there to make money for whoever their station is. And people, you know, Rush has successfully reframed what he supposedly is. He's America's newsman. No, he is an entertainer, and he has one of the largest audiences on radio. So you got to give him kudos. But he is an entertainer. He is not a news person.
Does a news person call a feminist a feminazi?
I don't know.
All right. Mike, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I mean, even if you don't like feminism, is that the accurate way? And if you were to compare the feminists that you know, like Gloria Steinem, to the folks that stormed the Capitol last week and tear gassed Capitol Police, hit Capitol Police with flags and fire extinguishers, broke windows, defecated and urinated inside the Capitol. I mean, could you ever compare the feminists that you know to that kind of behavior? I mean, I think there are Nazis out there, but anyway. Sue writes this email, Newt is really the root of the problem we now face. He turned our bipartisan Congress into the eternal war we face now. He began to change everything with his moral majority links and self-righteous speeches. While divorcing two wives and having three marriages, he was rejected as speaker when a book deal revealed irregularities. He left, but his evil legacy remains. Now he is saying that Democrats want to eliminate Republicans. Get a grip, writes Sue. And we're getting a lot of emails. Some are sending attachments. it's hard to read a long attachment, I got to say. But if you can distill your thoughts into three good quality sentences, I promise I'll read them. Ernie writes this, prevarication is the forte of all media, left and right, writes Ernie in Port Richey. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of people try to get the story straight and try to have a measured, balanced outlook. And a lot of people that are journalists do that. They're fair people. If Republicans screw up, they go after them. And if Democrats screw up, they go after them. And those, you know, when was the last time a Republican screwed up and you saw a week-long or 2-week-long or a month-long investigation on Fox? When was the last time Fox went after a Republican? Let's go to Wyatt in Sarasota. Wyatt, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Hey, first off, I really appreciate what you do and your patience with some of these people that call with, crazy opinions. I think you handle very well. So thank you for that. Basically, the reason I'm calling is because ever since the election, when I'm not listening to your station or the other NPR stations, I monitor what they're saying on Rush Limbaugh and all the other AM radio stations. And maybe with the exception of Hugh Hewitt, every single one of them pushed the election fraud. Trump won by a landslide. You know, and it's just over and over and over again. And it's just every 3 hours it rotates. And, you know, I know Rush is, probably going to retire soon, but these young guys that substitute for his shows, I mean, they're worse. And it's just really a sad state that this, I mean, you know, of course, Fox News is just the cherry on top of that. But it's just, repeat.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a structural problem too, and that is that Democrats are generally in favor of doing something to fight climate change, generally in favor of the rights of working people and raising the minimum wage, making some sort of equality when it comes to wages between African Americans and white people and women and men. But you know, if you're an advertiser. And you're looking for a place to advertise, and let's say that you're a big box store and you pay minimum wage, or let's say that you're an oil company and you don't like this effort to fight climate change because you've got rights to all these oil reserves. You don't want to give them up, and you don't want to see the value of those oil reserves dwindle to nothing because people have gone to electric and solar. So who's going to advertise on a AM station? Of course it's going to be the big box stores and the people that are against the minimum wage increase. So it's hard to get somebody who's a liberal funded by these big advertisers. And I think that it's a structural problem that we face in the U.S.
And the MyPillow guy, of course.
I fear him. If he went to the White House last week and that document he suggested to Donald Trump said declare martial law, I mean, what is that guy really up to? What does he really stand for?
I don't know, but I really hope that they come down hard on these people that went into that Capitol building and did what they did. Because if they don't, then it's just going to be more of the same. I fear. Well, anyway, thanks, bro.
All right, thanks, Wyatt. Thanks for your compliments, too. Mark and Brandon writes, exterminate is just about the strongest word the English language has for the purposeful destruction of life. I have heard it used before in reference to the Nazi gas chambers many times. So how are we to react to Newt's use of the word, writes Mark in Brandon. Mark, thanks for your comments. And Doug in Clearwater writes, looks like the attack from the right shows no sign of desire for unity, no excuse for the comment about lynching. Funny how there is now an attack on this language when Republicans would have nothing of it when 45 incited the behavior that led his supporters saying death to Pence, writes Doug in Clearwater. Thank you, Doug. And let's go to Rob in Thanodosassa. Rob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Thanks, Rob. Finally the rift happened with my friend of 50 years, and it happened after the Capitol was attacked. And, you know, he made a comment about how patriots are marching on the Capitol. And then when they got into the Capitol, I said, well, this is ridiculous. These people aren't patriots. And it kind of degenerated over the next few days. He claimed that the guy sitting at Pence's desk, you know, the so-called, isn't that the shaman of QAnon? But he said the next day, well, he's already been doxxed as a Antifa member. And then, of course, that wasn't true when he was arrested. And I pointed that out a couple days ago after the inauguration. And he said, I said, well, you said this, and now that's not true. You know, you make a lot of claims. And I haven't been engaging him. He'll send me these, you know, sort of inflammatory texts over and over, and I finally have to respond. And he goes, oh, well, he's a double agent. So it's always something.
He's the guy with the horns is a double agent?
Yeah, the horns. So,
okay.
You know, so, I mean, at first he was arguing that everybody inside the Capitol was in some sense Antifa or Black Lives Matter or something. And, of course, that's now indefensible. And I finally said, you know, when Biden, I guess down to the last second, he thought something would happen to keep Biden from taking office. And he said, the Republic is lost. And I sent him a picture of my dog and the big American flag I have out sometimes. And I said, or maybe it's been saved from seditionists, you know. And then he started to, you know, make disparaging ad hominem attacks against me that had nothing to do with my arguments. And finally said something to the effect of, well, if you, next time you need me to do something for you, find somebody else. Mm. And I said, look, you, and it's really painful to me, you know. I said, you asked me, do you want me to patronize you? Do you want me to tell you what you want to hear? I'm being honest with you. That's all I can do. I'm not going to patronize you. And I haven't heard back from him. So I relate to all these things you've been playing and the documentary. And even yet, that lady that was on the recording, that really hit home, because it's extremely painful when you lose people or you have a huge rift between you. People that, and he used to be a happy-go-lucky guy, rock and roller, you know what I mean? Not really that political, to be honest.
And what do you think his media source is?
Oh, I know what it is. It's all going to be Newsmax. It's not even Fox. He thinks Fox is sold out, is a sellout. I mean, it's just all the most far right. You know, I know he's under 8chan and you know, probably Newsmax and Parler and all that. I mean, it's just he's gone so far down that
road. All right, Rob, I'm sorry. Sorry you lost your friend.
That's okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank
maybe
you.
It'll be better. Yeah.
All right.
Maybe get better.
And I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I haven't played some of the things that have been said in the last few weeks. Predictions by people who are either on talk radio or conservative TV or sometimes religious leaders. Predictions about what Joe Biden is going to do to them. But you probably know some of what the predictions are. I might save those for a future show. But I think it's fair to say that, that people who mainline Fox News and Newsmax live in fear and think that somehow Joe Biden is a dictator and is going to round all these folks up. And we'll talk about that at a later show because I've got some very chilling things that have been said by religious leaders around the country. Let's go to... we started this show by asking whether or not your family members had been affected by either AM talk radio or Fox News. Now, let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, none of my family members have been affected, so thank God. You know, back then you were talking about some of the liberal voices here, especially you said Bob Lasseter, and there was Jay Marvin, and, of course, our great hero Mark Burrell. When they were on FLA. And,
yeah, but they stuck Mark on Sunday nights, which is the...
Sunday night. That's, I remember you were on there, and you were a guest there a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yep, and some grim news, though. Mark called me about 20 minutes ago and told me that Hank Aaron died last
Hank
night.
Hank Aaron has died, yes.
Yeah, I did not know that. Yeah. I know Jimmy Rogers died Monday because my nephew Stephen told me. But, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, I think that I woke up early on the 20th, to see, make sure this guy actually got on the plane and left and his family. And I'm just so relieved. And I'll tell you something right now. I think that Ted Cruz, Donald Trump Jr., Mo Brooks, Donald Trump himself, I think that they should be charged with accessory to murder. and Nancy Pelosi has said as much, too. So and there's plenty of proof that these guys said that they went there on behalf of Donald Trump. They told him that's enough proof to convict him in the impeachment trial, which I really don't think he's going to be convicted. I don't think he's going to have the 17 Republicans. I really don't. And you know, to do that, which just says a lot for them. And so Rob. So that's exactly what's going on. And I'll tell you, to think that Joe Biden is a dictator. We just got rid of a dictator.
All right, Danny, thank you. Let me just mention Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron, who endured racist threats with stoic dignity during his pursuit of Babe Ruth's home run record and gracefully left his mark as one of baseball's greatest all-around players, died today. He was 86 years old. The Atlanta Braves, Aaron's longtime team, said he died peacefully in his sleep. No cause was given. And we're going to get more at the top of the hour on the NPR News. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Francesco in Sarasota. Francesco, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi, Rob. You said the important words, fear, and I would add resentment. I go way back in New York. I used to listen to, on my way home from college, you know, I would listen to talk radio, and I would listen to Bob Grant, and when Hannity came on, he was in New York initially. That was his big step
up. And Grant, in his day, was a racist. He was...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I called him. I got to call all these shows over the years. I called Rush Limbaugh, et cetera, because, as you can tell, I'm into that. But, I told Grant when he was about to retire, I said, you know, I hope you're proud. Your legacy is going to be that you incited, you know, racism, or you encouraged racism. That's going to be your legacy, Mr. Grant, when you leave, you know. And he gave me the old, you know, get off my phone, you fraud, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. But then I listened. I was a musician. I traveled around the country, and I realized traveling across the country, you got one point of view in most of the country. This was way back, and Rush was on, and Rush is unfortunately very talented at what he does, but he doesn't have any need to adhere to the truth or any facts or anything, so he's got quite an advantage.
Yeah, even in small towns these days, you've got people that are wannabe Rushes hosting AM stations. Yeah, it's a frightening trip. All right, Francesco, thanks a lot.
All right.
Great to hear from you. And Terry writes, the Lost My Dad interview hits close to me. My older brother's family in Tennessee are pro-Trumpers. My brother won't talk to me, and the recent Facebook posts after the inauguration include Biden has dementia. You are stupid if you voted for him. So sad, writes Terry, who's out there in cyberspace. A bunch of emails have come in. Lee in Tampa says, a similar but less extreme change has happened to my husband. He has become less able to calmly discuss politics and can't tolerate being around people of different viewpoints than he was, and listens to the radio much of his waking hours. We both love WMNF, but I think it has changed him. So if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Janelle. She's coming up next on the Midpoint program. Thanks to Cindy Philpott. She's been our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF in Tampa. Have a great weekend.